Dr. Foyt with us for a brief discussion period. We will have some remarks and ask that there be discussion, questions at the conclusion. And remember then that after he is done, we will hear from Mr. Hamm.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Dr. Cameron. I should think that perhaps in 20 minutes, 25 minutes, I can give you a sort of overview of the challenge of adult education for two purposes, mainly for your own incitement to spiritual growth, and secondly, to give you some vision of the educational task. In the past, I think we have identified Christian education a little too strongly with childhood, and sometimes we've extended it pretty well into youth, but we haven't realized that Christian growth is a lifelong process. So if you will, I will try to give you within the next 20 minutes or 25 minutes the challenge of adult education, because I believe that this may be more stimulating to you, and I hope it will bring forth some questions. As long as we live, we learn. Life is a school, and you and I are the pupils. Education is more than a schoolroom and textbooks. Everything around us is influencing us day by day. There was never a time when more people needed to know more things about in our very complex world than today, and the gap between what we know and what we ought to know widens with every hour. Sometimes the idea has taken hold in the minds of our people, especially also our adults, that growing, that Christian growth, that Christian education, that learning is something that is restricted to childhood. That, of course, is not true. Cato learned Greek at 80. And in the This Week magazine of a few weeks ago, some of our octogenarians were pictured. People who have performed outstanding services and kept on growing all their days and have done their most significant work after they were 60. So somehow we must dispel the false idea that learning is accomplished by the age of 14 or 25. Actually, we learn as well at 40, perhaps, as we did at 14. And some believe that our learning capacities can be stimulated and will increase as we go on through the years. Well, the question then is, why must adults learn? They must learn in order to understand the life that is before them, that is constantly changing. There are always new situations. They must be able to get a fuller perspective. They must be able to adjust to problems. All of life can be enriched, or people can just vegetate and complain about how hard life actually is. Much of the difference will be in whether they remain growing persons or whether somehow they have stilted their growth and have arrested their development. Now, we know that there is another dimension, namely the Christian dimension. In order to keep up, then, with new discovery and progress, the ordinary citizen will have to be a growing, reading, studying, learning person. We must also realize that the affairs of the world, the pace of the world, and the effectiveness of the whole world is pretty much determined by adult minds. If then the church stops to train at age 14 or even at the age of 25, then it fails its people at the time when they are meeting life's greatest problems. There are a number of areas in which this growth, of course, should take place. I've already indicated that much of this growth should take place in the field of the spiritual, because we are to grow mentally and socially and spiritually and physically. We are to have growth in every field. Now, we can learn a great deal, of course, from the growth that takes place in other areas. The doctor of medicine keeps going back for additional courses, for refresher seminars. He reads books. During the 30s, we had to recondition the American adult to adjust to the Depression. In the 40s, we had to retrain people, even as we retooled machines for the entire war. So adults need to rethink their religion, lest they become childish adults. We are to have a childlike faith, but we're certainly not to be childish adults. We can ask our people, how big is your Bible? And of course, each Bible is so big. And yet the only Bible you have is the Bible that you know, and it can be so thin. Every person has three Bibles, a book of doctrine, a book of worship, and a book to live by. He may know the book of doctrine fairly well, but does he know the book devotionally, so that he can use it devotionally well as a book of worship, and does he have it on his desk so that he can live by it? We cannot take in enough spiritual gas on Sunday to carry us through the entire week. We need a daily intake of this gas that makes the car run, but the running of the car isn't the goal either, but what we will do with that car for ourselves and for our world. The things that we learned as children are often very incomplete and fragmentary, and many of the things that we have learned have been forgotten, and so this demands spiritual growth in adult life. We must discover the relevance of the scriptures. This relevance of the scriptures is more than Bible history. We must somehow get away from the situation then and find its meaning for the situation of today. And so Moody very correctly said, "I've never found a useful Christian who was not also a student of the Bible." During my European trip, probably the most important two sentences that I heard came from Dr. Sverre Smaldal of the Norwegian Bible Society. He said, "The more the people work with the Word, the more the Word works on them, and the more they want to hear the Word. But the more they only hear the Word, the less they want to work with the Word." The basic nature of Bible study for young people and adults ought to be always kept in mind. Evangelism training comes best if we have mastered, let's say, the Gospel of John or the Book of Acts. Our people can worship much more intelligently if they know some of the purple passages from the prophets, if they can trace back the order of service to the Psalter from which much of it originates, if they can understand the parable and the biblical illustration which is in that sermon, and how can they sing "Nearer, My God, to Thee" without an understanding of Jacob's ladder, or "Holy, Holy, Holy" without understanding Revelations 21. So you can go into the other areas. The stewardship performance is never greater than the spiritual convictions of the people. How can they be parents and bring out of their own rich store of biblical understanding enough to teach their children or to lead them in intelligent family worship if they are not at home in the scripture itself? So it matters not what phase of church work we look at. Bible study is basic for fundamental Christianity and for the functioning of the Christian life. The second challenge is that we'll have to give our people a greater understanding of the spiritual life, so they can face life victoriously with Jesus. Life isn't easy today, not even the rearing of children. And there are many more marriage problems than formerly. Fear is with us. Worry and hardship and trials and temptations and sicknesses and reverses and loss. We live in a world of tension and are sitting on a powder keg. There is tension in labor, there is tension in the family, there is tension in the nation, there are tensions in the world. How can adults, Christian adults, meet these issues and bear these burdens at a time when almost 1 million people are in our mental hospitals? There is a famous letter which was written by a lady in Texas, and it ends something like this: "I have this need and I have that need. Isn't there someone in America that can help me meet these needs?" And of course, there is someone in America, but her basic need is not merely to be had in the philosophies of the world's great thinkers. It's to be had in Christ, for He is the answer. Third challenge of Christian adult education is to strengthen what we are doing in our Christian schools and Sunday schools with children. We have done very well with the education of our children, but are we getting the rightful fruits for the sowing and for the investment in time and money? Do we stop much too soon? Are we still plagued with the confirmation complex? One of the most common hindrances to the child's spiritual development are the adults that are in the home. If they have no vision of excellence, if they have no great goal in life, then these children will likewise, or usually will likewise, not have much of a goal in life. Let me illustrate. The so-called 17 million, and some have estimated as high as 27 million, young people and children who are not in Sunday school or under regular religious instruction, why are they in that particular condition? Because they have parents who do not get them ready for Sunday school and church on Sunday. And if they have to overcome their own drives toward perdition, plus the indifference and the opposition of their parents, then they have a very formidable obstacle to be encountered in making spiritual progress. And so the disregard of Sunday is because America's Saturday night is not properly used. There is a poem with which you are familiar about the lost sheep. This poem, however, is directed not to the lambs but to the sheep, for it says, if the sheep go wrong, it will not be long until the lambs are as wrong as they. We must then reach parents as well as children. And Deuteronomy 6 emphasizes just that. Written many years, perhaps 1,000 years before there was a synagogue school. But there it was laid upon the heart of the father and the mother. They first were to have this knowledge in their own hearts. And then they were to use every incident of the normal life to impress it upon their children. Martin Simon puts it this way. Stewardship is important, so we have stewardship schools. And Sunday school teaching is important, so we have Sunday school teacher training courses. The home and parents are important, but what are we doing to equip parents for their teaching and training tasks? Because there are a great many teaching and training tasks. Are we spending enough of our educational money on youth and on parents? If we would get the full benefits of our work with the child, then it must not stop at age 14. The fourth challenge, the challenge of building the Christian home. This is very closely related to the previous one, but I'd like to emphasize what a Kansas City churchman told me during the war. He said, I've been in a number of meetings, the welfare group, the public schools, others have had difficulty with juvenile delinquents. And every discussion has ended at one place, at the door sill of the dwelling. And yet I find only two or three churches in Kansas City that have a program of family life education. You see, much that happens before the child ever gets in school is determinative of personality and later development, and certainly of attitudes. The way the parents talk, their art ideal, their appreciation of music, their love for books or their lack of love for books, and also their interest or disinterest in worship and the church will rub off upon the children. And the first 4 years may be as important, say the psychologist, as the four college years. The environment which that we find in the home. Parents, you see, have an authority that nobody else has. They see the whole child, not the prim pupil, all dressed up, or the Sunday child, but the child just as it is, and have access to every side of this child, the strengths as well as the weaknesses. They have natural learning situations. While in the school we have a contrived learning situation, and they can apply law and gospel as it needs to be applied at the moment. And if the child is to have some vision of excelling, of achievement, some real goal, the father and mother will have to give them the spark of dependability and loyalty and love for truth and desire to serve their fellow men. So the family is very basic. The home is superior because of these facts. When does the education of a child begin? Well, one educator says 20 years before the child is born, because what goes into the mother and father's training is then passed on imperceptibly into the life of the child. The fifth challenge, the challenge of providing more lay workers. Our congregations are constantly hampered, and every December we scurry around to find enough people, men and women, to fill the various committees and offices of the Christian congregation. And the work of the church is restricted altogether too much to the what we call the one-man ministry. Or as O.P. Kretzmann put it years ago, the work of 2 million souls has become the work of 5,000 pastors. The work is done by the upper one-third, and we have some problems. A Presbyterian man marrying a Lutheran woman came into her church and eventually was elected to the board of elders. But he worked with that board of elders 2 or 3 years, and finally he resigned. He said, they are so unspiritual. None of them attend Bible class. None of them would open a meeting with prayer. Maybe he was in an exceptional situation. He said, and when I proposed spiritual goals, they seemed to have no interest. They were concerned only with the outward affairs and the external properties of the Christian congregation. Well, we're going to have more of those unless we will train more laymen for leadership positions. At a churchman's retreat here in Missouri a number of years ago, we asked the laymen, why aren't more of your brethren participating in the life and work of the congregation? And they gave us a number of answers. I'll try to recall some of them. He said, first of all, we're not as acquainted with the Bible as we feel we ought to be leaders. Secondly, nobody has enlisted us. And thirdly, nobody has given us any training for the particular function that we are to fulfill in a particular office to which we've been elected. Then we are somewhat ignorant of our privileges as priests of God. Those were a few of the reasons which they gave. So the training of elders is a part of adult education. There is one church body in America, the Presbyterian Church USA, that has a regular training program for everyone that's elected to the presbytery of the local church. And now, fortunately, we too are making some progress with church officer training in churchmen's retreats and in Bible institutes. Making some calls in Kansas City one day, I noticed another man in this same housing area. He almost followed me up and rapped on doors. But finally we met, and I said, well, are you a pastor of a church? No, he said, I'm the elder of our congregation. Then I asked, do you do this regularly? He says, yes, all of our elders, every Tuesday evening, make calls. Well, that's something that we can achieve, I believe, also in our church. The division of labor and the distribution of work needs to be learned, and pastors must trust their laymen. Or as Dr. Erdman Frank puts it, they must find them and grind them and mind them. Find them, that is select them, grind them is train them, and then listen to them or mind them. We must create spiritual men. The sixth challenge is the challenge of conservation or preventing losses. We know what it means to conserve soil. There is a new understanding of the stewardship of our natural resources. We have a great commission in our country that is looking at the resources of oil and of coal and are telling us to conserve what we are now bringing to the surface. Well, in the Missouri Synod, we lose more souls and communicants than we have in our smaller districts every year because the back door is open. And in every congregation, we have a large number of marginal members. Why are they marginal members? And why are they on the fringe? A growing Christian person is seldom lost. The religion you use, you do not lose. And the alert Christian adults are saying to us leaders, use us or lose us. The growing person is usually also a working person. And the old vision, the vision in Ezekiel of the dry bones, then there came a voice, and behold, the dry bones were clothed with flesh, and they lived once again. So there is a task that the church has to do in every age of causing the dry bones to rise and to live and to move. But we must reach these people in time with meaningful adult education. At some point, Christ ceased to have enough meaning, and then they became indifferent and careless. So we must beseech them, as Paul besought his people in all of his letters, to carry on with Christian education. And sometimes it'll have to be private. Or as Bishop Meiser said, we need not merely to exhort and preach at them. Somehow we must talk to them. We must have a Gespräch. The seventh challenge is to stem worldliness. We may call it secularism. In the 10th Psalm, we have the word, God is not in all of his thoughts. There are a great many people today who think and live from one day to another and from one week to another without ever thinking of God. And there are some people in the church who think about him on Sunday, but during the rest of the week, their routine life is a life in which God plays not a very big role, or they think 1 hour on Sunday is quite enough, and they're quite concerned only to remain members of the church and not growing disciples of our Lord. We're living in an age of what Sorokin calls a sensate culture. Omar Bradley, in his famous Boston speech, said that what we needed more than atomic power and more than progress in physics and other areas of science was to have spiritual men. And Lindbergh said that unless our spiritual power keeps pace with our scientific development, then science can be our undoing, not because science in itself is bad, but because we have lost our sense of balance and our sense of values. And T.T. Swearingen put it this way. He said, we must indeed do a great deal for children and for young people, but as adults, as parents, determine the temper and the atmosphere and the whole life of the people that live in their home. As citizens, they go to the polls and they direct and guide our democracy. And as men in business, they there also make their influence felt because they are the people that operate and more or less determine the patterns of our society. So we need to realize that unless your life is your religion and your religion is your life, neither will amount to very much. Now I have condensed what I had hoped to give to you in a much longer presentation. I miscued the time. However, we do now have about 15 or 20 minutes for discussion. I wonder if you want to tie into something that I have said or present questions with regard to your own growth or the growth, the guidance of adults in the Christian congregation. Who wants to start with a question? Do you want to go into something that I didn't cover at all? For instance, I didn't cover Bible study. I didn't say anything particular about family life education. I didn't say too much about our Bible institutes. If we want to look at that phase, what is your observation? What are your questions? All right, here. Well, I believe that along with the diet of the service and the sermon, we ought somehow to create in our people the idea that the Lord's Day should be used for study as well as worship. And that we somehow need to give to our congregation the pattern of doing both on the Lord's Day so that they have the exhortation, the guidance and the shepherding that comes from the sermon and the worship that they can get in the common service, but at the same time, they are in little fellowship groups in which they can exchange ideas, in which they can grow, in which there is a sort of a fellowship of study, where they can share with each other their faith and their love and their insights. The Bible is a book so abundant, so rich, that no two eyes can discover everything that is in a text. 10 pairs of eyes will do a whole lot better. So rich is the word. Now, as they each discover something different, I believe that there will be a growth that otherwise would not be taking place. I think the psychology of learning is this, that we learn a good deal by discussion, and that we need a two-way street. And I think that in the Bible class, we get that two-way street, providing it is quite different than the sermon and is not a lecture, but a discussion group in which it becomes an adventure in discovery. They find what is there. In Norway, I found probably the best modern example of the revival of Bible study. In their larger churches, they will have 30 to 50 small groups of 10 people that meet in cottages. They have a Bible study program. They meet during the week at the hour that's convenient to the group in the neighborhood. Nobody comes into the meeting unless they have read the paragraph it is assigned. A lay leader is prepared. They have a very simple New Testament commentary to give them guidance. And then they simply say, what are your questions? What directions for faith and life do you find? And what new understanding did you get? And then as around the circle, and they try to keep the circles down to 10, they get their questions out and they share their experiences and their know-how, then a richer understanding of the text comes. And many people who would not darken the door of the church are being brought back through these informal study groups. Or to take another example, in Mainz, Germany, there is a minister who works with labor. In fact, he works with them during the week. He can't get many of these men into the church. He invites them to a Sunday dinner, and there around the table, they take the epistle or the gospel of the day, but they discuss it. Now, I expect that we need to do some courageous thinking and provide these two elements, along with, of course, some other elements, for the Christian growth of the individual. Much learning must take place through doing. Prayer is a skill. All the skills, I think, will have to be learned through practice. Now, did I give you a little more on that? Do you have another question? All right, there. Thank you for your question. I believe you're quite right. I discover a great deal of superficiality of, let's say, external church membership, of merely belonging, and it's joining this and joining that. And I was favorably impressed with a Bible class in Nuremberg that was attended by about 25 young men. Only one of them was a theological student. He opened the discussion. But in 15 minutes, they penetrated very deeply into that text, and it was a degree of penetration that I've hardly observed here in America. Now, that depth, I think we need to recover. You've also indicated that they ought to know something about the history of the church and certainly the Lutheran confessions. I go right along. Adult education cannot be done merely with Bible study. We have, therefore, 8 different areas we're thinking of. The Bible in life, doctrine and ethics, evangelism, family life education, training in worship and understanding and learning more about worship. Then the Christian in our complex society with all of its problems. How do you meet the problem of labor and war and the atomic bomb or the race question? Then the church in the world, not merely church history, but you are writing a book of Acts today, and what contribution are you making toward this new book of Acts? That approach to church history. We are the church. The church is people. And then, of course, the stewardship of all of life. So adult education ought to not be isolated. It ought to be somewhat comprehensive. And in one way or the other, there ought to be growth in these areas. Although the subject area, you can approach this, of course, in a somewhat different way. But I believe that this balance ought to be made available to the people of the congregation, and that we ought to reinvestigate our whole parish program, because the whole life and spirit and work and activity of the congregation is also education in itself. But if this is non-spiritual, if it's purely, if the fellowship is not so much a fellowship in the spirit as it is a fellowship of a society, a club, then we fail of our spiritual purpose. Have I answered your question, or do you have another one? All right, over here. Yes, it does. The 1969 annual will, for the first time, carry the names of our 60 evening schools, which we call Bible Institutes. This Bible Institute is a sort of a total umbrella for leadership education. Teachers in Sunday school, elders in the congregation, church officers, women may get some training in working with women, and there can be a seminar for youth work. All of this under this one umbrella. God has richly blessed this movement, and it's almost become then spontaneous in its development, and it's bound to grow. In Northern Illinois, there are 15 such Bible Institutes. That's a geographically very condensed area, and there it's very practical. But also in the state of Minnesota, they're trying to set up such a training school in every circuit. We have syllabi for courses. One of the syllabi is training the church officers. We've sold hundreds of them. We probably should be selling thousands of them. And we have in our department a clearinghouse for courses. We have something like a 100 courses outlined in leadership education through Bible Institutes. I'd like to close this point by repeating what John R. Mott, the great missionary statesman, said. He that multiplieth the workers is greater than he that doeth the work. I think we've been doing too much of the work and not multiplying the workers. A St. Louis layman once said, we will have to do what Jesus did. He selected 12 men, and he didn't do a lot of other things, but he did train these 12 men. And if every pastor can increase himself by 10 or 20 people, he can leave a ministry at a certain place after 5 or 10 years with 10 to 20 people who will carry on the rest of their lives. That man's ministry has been richly blessed and is very successful. And he does not lose stature when he gets other people, trains other people. He gets that answer your question? Yes, this is being done in a great many congregations. In addition to Sunday school teacher training classes and courses, Pastor Frank in Joliet makes every elders meeting such an elders training school, but he has very definitely planned his subjects in advance. He uses his 50 or 60 deacons and elders in house calls so they come back with all kinds of problems. So you can train on the job. I would say that's the most important type of training to be done. You can take the women of your women's league and in a retreat over a weekend, help them develop their own program. But if you give it to them on a platter, you're not helping them to develop. In the sharing of a circle or a group, in the throwing in of many ideas and testing the ideas, there develops a mutuality and a diversity, and also a unity that you couldn't get if the pastor simply handed the program to them on a platter. So I'm very happy to brought that point up. Leadership education should take place also in the local church. In fact, it should take place there first. But the local church will have limitations of time and probably teaching personnel, and would not be able to offer what a group of congregations jointly in a Bible Institute could offer. Any other questions? Well, one more point possibly. What we do with families is tremendously significant. During these days, we've been tabulating a survey of the women of the pastors with regard to the women's work of the church. It's very interesting how many of them said, we must prepare the woman and the man to fulfill their roles. The mother to somewhat give to all the children an idea of the home and family and the inner life. The father Of course, he will also give training in the inner life, but he ought to interpret the outside world to his children. Father and mother as a team have a tremendous task. Now, if it is true that the parents are the most significant teachers, then we'll have to go into a parent training program, I believe, in every church. I don't mean to imply now that this has to be superimposed. I think it can be done along with preaching, with Bible class. We have a 13-lesson course called Parents Are Teachers, Bible-based. It's ideally suited for a Bible class of parents. It can be done in the ladies' aid meeting. It can be done in the men's club meeting. It can be done in the couples club. Let's prepare the woman to fulfill the role God gave her in creation. Let's prepare the man that he may fulfill his role given to him not only in the order of creation, but especially in the order of redemption. Let's prepare all to be priests and priestesses of God. Then I think we will be using the means by which the spiritual life grows and is developed.
Thank you.